Welcome back to Transform, a podcast highlighting the people and ideas shaping the future of senior living. I'm Austin Montgomery for Senior Housing News. On today's episode, I spoke with Kendall Corporation CEO Vassar Bird. The Newark, Delaware-based senior living company operates 10 communities in 8 states. Led by Bird, the Kendall Corporation envisions a future senior living landscape that moves beyond traditional continuing care retirement community models to identify new ways of serving older adults in the future, specifically aimed at affordability and intergenerational living. This comes as Kendall continues to redevelop campuses to best position its communities to capture new demand while addressing extensive wait lists.
I think it's very simplistic to lean on the demographics. I hear people doing that all the time. It's like, that's an interesting piece of information, but it does not make a successful future. So I think if we don't disrupt ourselves, we're going to be disrupted from the outside.
Now, here's my interview with Kendall Corporation CEO Vassar Bird. Welcome back to Transform. Vassar, thanks so much for joining us today.
Pleased to be here.
And for those who might not be familiar with Kendall, can you outline the organization's footprint? I know there's a lot of different aspects to the organization, so I just want to make sure you get a chance to kind of outline Kendall for all our listeners.
Happy to. So the Kendall Corporation has been around since the early 80s. We're a not-for-profit Quaker-based organization supporting senior living providers across the country. So we currently have 10 organizations in 8 states. And I had to write them down because I'm almost there. I can almost remember every state: Pennsylvania, New York, Ohio, New Hampshire, Massachusetts, Virginia, DC, and California. So the majority of those organizations are CCRCs or life plan communities, but we do have one continuing care at home, Kendall at Home, and one community that only offers licensed care, and another one that has levels on one site, but is not a life plan community.
Thank you. That's really helpful. And we know that we'd followed you closely when you were with Rose Villa. And I want to talk about that because I've been asking executives this question who have been on our podcast, who have held prominent, especially CEO roles in the past. I want to ask how maybe your past experience there has informed your current role with Kendall. I know there's probably a lot of alignment around things like sustainability, intergenerational connectivity, but I just want to get your opinion here on how you think your past experience has really informed where you are now with Kendall.
Thank you. What's attracted me to Kendall is really understanding the unusual value proposition that they offer. As a former operator, and this is the important part, I really believe in the power of each individual community to transform the way people live their lives together. So Kendall exists only to support those communities to deliver the best experience they possibly can for their residents and their staff. So we provide, at Kendall, we provide support in HR, in finance, facility management, culinary and housekeeping services, marketing, IT, governance, and we have a group purchasing program. But what each community needs is specific to that community. Not everybody uses everything. Yeah. So by partnering with us, they get the benefits of scale as if they were part of a giant organization, a much larger team, and at a much lower cost. At the same time, we do not swamp their identity or their culture or their values. So I think it's really unreasonable, having come from a single site, it's unreasonable to expect a single site to have everything they need on staff. That's crazy. Our business has gotten super complex. A lot of people spend a lot of money on consultants. And I think it's a stronger relationship when we work with someone like Kendall as a partner. We have a deep understanding of each other so that we can sort of be beside each other as we need things. And the only purpose of Kendall is to support the affiliates. So instead of standardizing them, we support their independent identity and their culture. So from my perspective, I'm not building an independent consulting company. It is all to provide support to affiliates. And that goal is to allow them to do only what they can do. And that's, you know, that's build their culture, build their community, tell their story, create partnerships. That's not something that you can, you know, outsource, but there's a lot of other things you can, and why not? We can do it for multiple organizations at a much better cost.
And we've heard a lot of senior living organizations, I think in the last couple of years, tell us that they've had great success in terms of having multiple brand lines, multiple from their communities across different markets to really help have their own identity. And that there's been a lot of improvement there on being able to reach new consumers, to actually capture some of that new demand that's coming in. Do you feel that Kendall, with its affiliations and the communities that Kendall serves, do you see that as an opportunity as well to be creative in each market and be different in each community? Do you want to highlight that a little bit before we move on?
Yes, I really do. And I think, you know, we are known for continuing education. So our communities are often in smaller towns with colleges. That alone gives it such a unique flavor. You know, is it a college like in Cornell? Is it Oberlin? So there's music versus engineers versus physicists. Like, it really makes a difference. So I think that we're able to really help support the individual identity of each community. But why spend your resources and your time doing stuff that really anyone can do? When time is precious, you need to spend it doing what only you can do. And that's telling your story. It's a really big deal.
Wonderful. Thank you so much for that. And I think this leads pretty well into the next question I want to talk about. And that's how you really understand Kendall's Quaker values and how you inform your leadership and how you envision the company's path ahead in terms of kind of aligning with those Quaker values. I'd love to just get your thoughts, because I know that's very important to you and also has propelled you into your role that you're in now. And we've followed that closely at SHN, but we really want to help our listeners understand that as well. So can you just highlight how the Quaker values really inform your leadership style?
Thank you. And that is true. That is one reason why I took this job. I'm a big communicator, and I believe in the value of a diverse team. So the Quaker value of inclusion, or inviting the stranger to the table, is one of the phrases that you'll hear me use a lot. That's deeply resonant with me. And I think the structure of consensus decision-making is harder than you think, but also more valuable than you can imagine. So it's worth the investment. Our Quaker heritage also informs a less hierarchical structure. And I think, you need to get input from every part of the community and everyone that you touch. And it's super limiting if you decide that you are top down, or that you only talk to your executive team or anything like that. I think that the flatter the organizational structure, the better. That aligns with Quaker values as well. We're super non-hierarchical. And I'm actually part of some of the things I'm doing now is sort of rationalizing the org chart at Kendall.
Okay.
So we don't really need a bunch of VPs. I don't understand the presidential nomenclature in senior living at all. We are not General Motors, you know? So we're all working together. We're all team-based. I like mixing it up as much as I can between people at different levels, different, you know, content experts, because that's where there's some magic stuff that can happen. You have unusual solutions to issues that you didn't think of. And so I think that's a big Quaker thing. I always would rather invest in results and relationships, not titles. And so in my perspective, you know, I like to think of it in terms of going forward, we're creating a league of experts that will serve Kendall affiliates to strengthen their own ability to grow and serve their own missions. So we're never mandating, we are supporting. Each affiliate's unique and interesting and creative, and we want to partner with them to make a difference in how older adults experience the last span of their lives. And the more diverse of the voices in the room, the more likely we are to make a deep experience that touches more people. And that's it. I mean, I think it is interesting. East Coast, West Coast, single site, multi-site. There's a lot of different variables in play. And I think it can be a little more tightly sometime on the East Coast. And people feeling like their positional authority is really important. And so that's definitely something that I have dealt with this last year, where as you get to know who I am, I do not care where you sit or what your title is. If you've got a great idea, I want you to talk to me. So that feels very resonant with our Quaker foundation.
And that's really interesting that you mentioned kind of the flattening of the org chart. Earlier this year, I wrote about the growing phenomenon of the co-CEO and co-president titles. Yes. So that was something that was inspired to me by Garden Management's Greg Eccles, who was talking to me about that. And that's kind of spurred me into covering. And I think there's something happening in the industry right now around changing leadership styles and thinking about leadership a bit differently. I hope that's because the industry is finally out of a place of crisis management mode from the pandemic to now actually being able to make some headway on some of the lingering things or really specific projects, especially within staffing, that can really make a difference. So when you're talking about the flattening of the org chart, what were some of the things you wanted to look at in terms of that? Because I wanted to ask, Has that really helped you improve on staffing at all? Have you seen some improvement, maybe increase in communication? I'd love to know maybe just how the how you're looking at this differently and how that's translated to the teams.
Yeah. I think it's making people less uptight. You know, that it's that I'm not talking to someone with a big title. I think it's just easier to be human and form a team that has ownership over an issue. That's where I think the real important change is. It is a shared accountability. And I think that the other thing that is important is in our relationship with our affiliates, that we are mirroring their organizational structure as we move down the road versus appearing to be some corporate office. And we've never acted as a corporate office. We are not set up that way. So I thought that was kind of odd that those titles and things had evolved over time to feel more top down, because we are just another affiliate in the system of affiliates. And my goal is to get every affiliate to show up for each other and to share best practices and be there for their colleagues. And that is very much not a hierarchical experience. So anything I can do to make sure that we are walking the talk, and that includes titles, that is important, because it makes the whole system function more as one giant team. And it's not just TKC, not just the Kendall Corporation. It's the whole system.
And beyond that, I think this sets a good foundation for us to talk about 2025. I would love to know how you think about the rest of this year and what maybe the first couple months have been like. But I want to think about what's ahead for 2025. What priorities in operations are you really focusing on? Obviously, staffing is a huge component of that. And it just speaks to what you've mentioned already. You're really focusing on the org chart and really trying to bring all the affiliates together and bring all the communities together. But in terms of operations for 2025, where are your priorities at? What are you thinking about for the rest of the year?
So I think it's true for a lot of companies who've been around for decades, and certainly in the post-COVID era, you just got to stop, you have to evaluate, you have to reset. And I think you should do that on a regular basis. It's never, you know, to be at the top of your game, you can't assume that what got you here is going to get you to the next level. That's the most important thing. And man, people get comfortable. I mean, it's like things are going pretty good, and you stop like really trying to have fresh eyes. So we have reorganized how we deliver services. So we brought in some great new team members, and those people are working with colleagues who've been in the system and have incredible experience within the system. So together, that kind of creates the best of both worlds, I think. Fresh eyes and institutional knowledge. So it's created a lot of energy. So that I would say that 2025 we're coming in with a lot of energy. We're focused on sort of delivering the best service and support that our system has ever experienced. And so some of the areas of focus that we have targeted this year is really around development for the affiliates. So redeveloping their campuses, helping them with their growth, satellite campuses. I would say almost every one of the Kendall affiliates have wait lists in the several hundreds of people. One of them has like over 800 people on wait list. So obviously people want what they're giving them, you know, that they're very interested in getting involved. So we want to help them deliver their mission to more of those people. So that's one big area. Another area is IT. We've created an extremely strong IT team. We're bringing on a CIO along with our existing CTO, so Chief Information Officer, Chief Technology Officer, to partner in technology development, execution management, and training, as well as providing a sophisticated approach to the business management of IT service delivery. So the goal is an extremely high level of affiliate satisfaction, at the same time that we are ensuring a very secure system that's poised for growth, where we can evaluate new technologies and do some R&D, because really the issue is, as a single site CEO, there is no way that you can possibly evaluate all of the tech stuff that comes your way. And a lot of it is just hot air, as I would say. I think you've really got to be careful. And so that's one thing that is a material benefit to our affiliates, is to help them with that. And I think that it's still kind of a thing in senior living field that the push for innovation and forward-thinking technology is often takes a backseat to other pressing needs. I mean, honestly, you're taking care of people's lives, and technology is kind of like the last thing you think about. So either you're not thinking about it, or sometimes people get really excited about the shiny object or whiz-bang technologies rather than system design. And gosh, that sounds boring when you say it out loud, but it is so important for the health of the system, for the future of the industry. I don't think that we can afford to ignore IT anymore. It's a critical infrastructure, just like water. And it has to have its own strategic plan and capital focus. So those are two of the big things that we're going to be focusing on this year.
And was that, in your mind, was that essentially some needed modernization that needed to happen for Kendall across the system? Or is this something to where you want to really look at innovation and what could be not that's there, but what could help the organization in the future? How are you thinking about it? Because I know there's two trains of thought for when you're thinking about bringing an organization up to speed on the IT side. It's either you want to make sure everything's like paperless and you need to have a good system in place that really can aid staff in improving their efficiency. And on the other hand, we know that some campuses, especially at scale, especially on the CCRC side, also are looking for things like creating incubation zones for new tech and really piloting various different things. So how do you think about that? Because I think you touch on a really important point when you said that you really need to understand the system dynamics and how it's being built and how it can help your team rather than just some of the flashy marketing gimmicks or outcomes that they want to highlight.
Yeah, I think it's both of those things. I think there's a little bit we can do more to create that security foundation, because let's face it, healthcare industry is a target all the time for health information records. That is a scary thing. That's a true fact in the world that we live in. Some of our tech tools show us that, you know, there are bad actors trying to get into the system, you know, 25 times every minute, you know, from all different countries. So that's a business reality. So I think that it's crazy not to really target that and make sure that you are rock solid. So that's one of the things. It's just making sure that we're not taking these for granted. I think it's really easy over time that things evolve, and then all of a sudden maybe you don't have a standard set up, and it's harder to fix things. So we're just making sure, and that's the upside of having a new leader in any organization, is like a lot of questions. How does this work? Is this really the best thing we can do? So that is great, and we have some smart people helping us. But beyond that, then what more can we do? And I'm very interested in smart home technology. What does that look like as a package? Because that's where you can spend a ton of money. Nothing connects. It doesn't make sense as an integrated offering. So that's where we can use our expertise to help figure out what makes sense. And if you don't have the money to, and it's so much money, how do you get started? So what would be the first two things you want to do? And then what's your strategic plan for, that's it. Like, I worry a lot about not having the resources or the time to think about the long-term integration plan, the long-term implementation plan, and how do you train everyone so that you're sure that people are using the technology you just spent a lot of money on. So you can fail in so many ways. Having a great team focusing on it's very important for everybody's operating efficiency at the very least.
Well, we'll definitely be keeping an eye on that, and I'm sure we'll follow up later in the year. I think we're actually WTWH Media, which is our parent company for Senior Housing News. They are actually hosting a CIO forum. So I think that is going to be a very exciting time. We can connect about that offline, but it's definitely something we're very interested in and learning how the space is innovating. So we know that there's a lot of opportunity, especially coming out of the pandemic. Now I want to touch on, in the last half of our conversation, I want to discuss how you see Kendall growing in 2025. I know you also have recently mentioned in the media a new concept, what you're calling a CCRC Lite. So I know we'll get there, but more broadly, just a question on growth first. For 2025, can you discuss any of the ways you see Kendall growing this year? I'd love to just highlight that, and then we'll dig into that CCRC Lite concept that you mentioned.
So, I mean, as we help our affiliates grow, we also expect the system to grow. So we're interested in additional scale with the right partners. We are not interested in growth for growth's sake. That is ridiculous. I think that's a horrible way to run a company. We have to be strategic and thoughtful. I know that a collective of forward-thinking organizations focused on the same thing, on improving the lives of the people we serve and the employees who provide that service, that can make a real difference in the industry. We can provide opportunities and examples of how to really push the needle. So scale is not really even just on the expense sharing side, but it can have a profound influence on the quality of life side. Because you see 10 organizations doing something, it's like, well, I think we can do that. So I think, you know, we already share best practices. We have great peer groups. I think that we have created a learning organization here. So we want to find additional partners to continue to make that difference. And I think I'm moving right into that. What your second question is, you know, those partners might look different. You know, we're primarily CCRCs right now. And as much as I love that model, I think it's a great model. for so many reasons. It serves a small slice of people.
Right.
And so what more can we do? So I don't want to jump ahead.
Well, it's okay. I think it's a perfect springboard into that conversation. I know you had mentioned that this new concept, which you call a CCRC Lite. I want to dig into that and understand that. Can you explain what the concept is in your mind and share some insights as to what it looks like? Because I think generally there's a lot of different thoughts that come to mind when you say CCRC Lite to me. And one of those gets to affordability. Right. Well, so I know we'll talk about that, but just outline what you mean by CCRC Lite and what that concept looks like and how you're envisioning it and what that could mean for the future of Kendall.
So I will say that I used that phrase, and the way I used that phrase was that we are not trying to do CCRC Lite.
Okay.
Because I feel that that sounds like we're not providing something or we're taking something away. So I don't want anyone to feel that. It really is, we're trying to build something completely new. And so maybe it doesn't even carry a CCRC license. That can be super limiting in some states.
Okay.
When we're trying to make more choices available to more people at a much wider variety of price points, those regulations can really add significant costs and it locks us into a more restrictive structure. The issue is that traditional CCRCs are loaded with costs that make it very difficult for this to be a reasonable option, even though it's a wonderful one, to any but a small percentage of older adults. So I want to know what more we can do. So fundamentally, what we do is build community. So let's deconstruct some of the assumptions around that so we can get at what makes community. I would say that the intentional choice to share the road together is profound, deep, and meaningful, and it doesn't require anything other than that commitment to build community. So you got to start from scratch. So for instance, some of the areas that I'm looking at, rather than a full dining service, which is incidentally one of the most expensive components of both building and operating a new community, can we create a space for community cooking or gathering to eat, a way to share meals that looks different? Maybe there are community restaurants or food truck partners as part of that solution. Maybe community meals are made by the community itself to share. Maybe there are grocery store drop-offs of meal kits. Maybe not every day looks the same. So we've really got to think about it differently. I would say licensed care is also a similar kind of, we just have to do it this way sort of situation. So I would say, where can we focus on partnerships with other providers rather than creating everything on site? Perhaps we provide a navigator to help members access services. Can we spark other providers to focus on filling gaps in service in a particular market? Can we leverage our relationships and some of the special sauce of the not-for-profit work and link arms to provide a deep choice for people we all serve? And when you think about those things, how much more economic diversity could we serve through a different approach? So I just feel like we got a little locked into something that worked great, feels great, but you have to own a home. You have to have significant investments. There's a lot more people. And I would throw in, honestly, because I love looking at things from a brand new perspective, maybe we are beyond the age restriction itself. I don't know. So take intergenerational to the next level. What more can we do? I think that we're only just scratching the surface of that question. So for us, I really think that that opportunity is something that we are very well poised to take advantage of and to start working with. And that's not only it's economic diversity, but it's also rural communities. There's so many people that are sort of left out of the couple of options that we've all agreed is senior living. So I think there's more to it. I really do. And I will say the other thing, I really like the co-housing movement. It lacks like what's the follow through when people age there, but that's really interesting. So what more can we do? How can we open it up as a model to different variations?
I think when you're talking about some of those areas of operations that are most expensive, and you touched on dining as a great example, I think it gets back to these things that are and for a long time have really been hurdles in any operating model, regardless of a portfolio size, regardless of your company size, regardless of your holdings. We know that the statics on staffing and dining are usually the two most expensive areas within operations. So it's interesting to hear you rethink that and to maybe want to talk about what that change could look like, because some of the conversations I had last week at NIC were also, I found myself talking about affordability quite often. We know that the middle market is essentially one big gray area, and what middle market could mean from one provider to the next can mean many different things. So when you think about middle market affordability and why that's on the top of your mind for Kendall for this year in 2025, I want to get your thoughts around the middle market, because I think with you talking about bringing some of these new concepts forward, even just having this conversation, I think is important. But how do you view affordability and what's happening there? Because I think essentially the industry could be missing out on so much demand because it's simply the customers can't, some customers can't pay for senior living options. And we need new ways to resolve that and to bring more people into the fold. Because yes, we have the demand on one hand, but if people can't pay for it, that's an unfortunate reality. So when you think about affordability in the middle market, why is that important for you and for Kendall? Because I think it's something you've put a lot of thought into.
It goes along with, you know, what are we here for? We're here to improve the lives of people, you know, who are looking at the last part of their lives. And I think it's not just to provide that to people who have wealth. I think everyone who's had a job and raised kids and, you know, worked in a business, everyone deserves choices. And I think our responsibility as a nonprofit, Quaker-informed organization is even more clear that we need to provide more options for more older adults. And the middle market, and also the other term that was really present at NIC was active adult. And so that was interesting to me, which seemed to mean just rental, which, you know, again, like, okay, then how do we make that work? Because the issue with not-for-profit providers, it's really hard to find financing without that CCRC model. So rentals are difficult for us to finance. So there's got to be some other ways. So I would argue that there's got to be some financial innovation around the corner too.
Yeah, most definitely. I think it's only something we're going to be watching more closely, especially as we see investor sentiment remain pretty high for the space across property type. Seems like across the continuum, it's people are really looking to get more active again. I think we're starting to maybe see some pre-pandemic conditions, albeit though we're not technically there yet from an occupancy standpoint, but I digress. And now I want to talk in the last few minutes of our conversation. I'd be remiss if we didn't talk about the Enso brand for Kendall. I know we've tracked the Enso Village opening in Heidelberg, California very closely, and also the Enso Verde community. So can you give us an update on the Enso brand? I just want to make sure we touch on there, and then we can also dive into just how you see the Zen-inspired concept really growing in the future for Kendall. So what's new with Enso? And then we'll dive into Zen-inspired
concept. Yeah. Well, what's really exciting about the Enso projects is working with a co-sponsor that shares our values, that adds a lot to our understanding. I'm very proud to work with San Francisco Zen Center, and I feel that we both organizations learn from and share with each other so that we are both growing and deepening our understanding. So that has been phenomenal. I really appreciate my colleagues there. Enso Village is right on track. We've got a new executive director there. We're filling up. Everything seems to be going very, very well. Enso Verde is in its marketing and pre-construction phase. So I can tell you that there's some really phenomenal people that have already signed up to become residents there. So that's pretty cool. I love seeing how that works. I think that in terms of us and for Kendall and Zen inspired aging, I think the focus on the spiritual richness is long overdue. I mean, I feel like the whole industry moved to this amenity focus, and that is really, people are not moving into hotels. I've got to be honest. There may be some people out there that are, but that's not what I'm doing. And that's not where I feel that people really resonate. I think with Enso, we're explicitly focusing on sort of the connected humanity of everyone, because you're choosing to spend that time with each other. So it's more than just mindfulness practice. It's really intentional living. And I think that message has huge resonance. It's not just an affinity product, too. I take a little bit of a, I feel askance, you know, when I hear that from somebody. But it's not affinity. That sounds like marketing. It's really, what does community mean to you? So, you know, I think our greatest untapped resource is the people we serve. And I think it's important to step beyond senior living as a cruise ship and focus on the power of the people who've chosen to live together and make a change in their environment. So you see this in the sustainability work. So that's a phenomenal opportunity to work alongside residents to research, prioritize, find funding for, and implement major changes in how we build and operate our communities, every single Kindle community is focused on this area. So many of those folks have completed carbon footprints as a basic starting point so that everybody understands where they're at. And I can't believe it. That is the coolest thing when I first did my tour of all the affiliates was to find out they're all doing carbon footprint studies. So I do think that the Zen-inspired concept has called out a significant portion of seniors who really care about each other and the world that we leave to our children and helping the greater community. So I would say in more standard words, you can say it's about capturing the demographic that wants to be engaged in lifelong learning, personal growth, and engagement. Or we can just say they are warriors for our joint existential soul, whatever talks to you on the day that you're thinking about it. But it's a big deal. And I think that that is the future of senior living. That is the future of building community together. And at some point, you know, maybe we stop calling it senior living and we call it intentional living or community living or something that is more inclusive of different ages and all kinds of opportunities.
Yeah, I think we've seen, and I profiled to begin last year, we had reached out to some of the university-based senior living communities to get their thoughts on intergenerational concepts, because I think internationally, intergenerational living is a pretty standard and almost well-understood concept, and it's not something that's foreign. But I think here, stateside, it can be something to where people don't necessarily they've never thought about it before. And I think it's interesting to watch as in real time, almost as the industry starts to think about intergenerational living, what that means, especially as we know that the senior living consumers of today, some of them are specifically seeking out more urban concepts that are in the middle, if you will, of a downtown area, or just being able to be part of a community that has connections with outside universities for lifelong learning, which we know is something that everyone preaches, but it's one thing to practice it. So we know there's a lot of things around the intergenerational concept that I think we will be watching become more and more commonplace. With the Zen-inspired concept and Zen-inspired aging, do you see that as an opportunity to really increase what the intergenerational kind of exposure is to the industry? Because I think it can mean multiple things.
I do think so. I mean, I think it builds on, we have a kind of a strong tradition of intergenerational service already. Many of our communities have both childcare and relationships with the colleges. So you've got people at all different ages, but I think that makes a lot of sense. It's another expression of connection. And I think it's a welcoming environment for all ages. And I mean, wouldn't it be great to have older people and younger people having a spiritual experience together at the same time? I mean, that's really a phenomenal concept to me. So
I agree. And I will definitely be watching that as I think more and more concepts come out of the woodwork and more. Oh, that's why I'm hopeful still that maybe in 26, we can see some more construction be announced rather than we're seeing so many openings, but we all know those were financed previously.
Yes.
Thankfully, you were able to get Enso Verde in the ground and get construction going there. We were able to get started, at least on the pre-construction side to get ready for that. In terms of what you see ahead in 2025 as your biggest challenges, I want to make sure we touch on what you see as the biggest hurdle for operations in 2025. And then also on the flip side, where do you see the biggest opportunities? I think we've talked about a lot of those today, but I want to just touch on challenges and opportunities for the year ahead, especially as it relates to operations.
Well, here's what we're focused on. I would say that we're focused on great leadership at every level, because the leaders make all the difference. You can't do anything without it. So I would say that's the core area to focus on. So we want to support the leaders and our affiliates. I feel the greatest gift that we can provide to affiliates is time for their leaders to do their thing. So we can do the block and tackling and they don't have to do all that stuff and they can focus on their own strategic path and telling their story. That's where they really get to make a difference. I don't think it's any different at TKC either. I have a great leadership team. We have some incredibly talented, driven managers in our organization, and I want to support those folks to help us get momentum. I would say that I really connect to the radical acceptance idea, which is just direct your energy toward possibilities rather than problems, and that will transform your challenges into opportunities. And that's really how I've always lived my life. So I would say on the opportunity side for us as an organization, the most exciting opportunities are going to be discovering who our future partners may be. So whether it's finding a partner that we can work with to create a new community, or an opportunity to come alongside an existing organization that's bumping up against the limits of their own growth for whatever reason, the ability to leverage that relationship to grow something new or stronger or more creative, that is an incredibly exciting. I mean, that's the coolest thing about this job. I think every one of those opportunities makes the whole system better because it provides more colleagues to affiliates, more ideas, more best practices, more perspective on what the next step could be. So I just think there's a lot of magic and opportunity working with this sort of collective of mission organizations and that I don't think there's anything that we can't do together. If we've got the right people in the room, that's it. So it's and there's a lot of organizations in the country that I think could be great partners. So I just want to help everyone grow and get stronger and really express the possibility that they can provide to their own market.
I think this is a great point for you to also touch on your outlook for what's ahead. This is your last question, then we'll get you out of here. But in terms of what you see ahead for the industry as a whole, I heard a lot of optimism, especially cautious optimism, I think. That's been a phrase that I've heard a lot recently coming out of the NIC conference. And that's just fresh in my mind, having just traveled back from there. And I know you were there as well. But in terms of your outlook for not just 2025, but maybe the industry as a whole, do you think things are improving? How's your sentiment? Are you cautiously optimistic along with everyone? What are your thoughts? I'd love to hear your outlook.
Well, I'd say that's a tough question. And I'm not going to give you happy talk, I promise. I think it's very simplistic to lean on the demographics. I hear people doing that all the time. It's like, that's an interesting piece of information, but it does not make a successful future. So I think if we don't disrupt ourselves, we're going to be disrupted from the outside. So, and I think that this is something that has been said before, but I don't know that people really, really take it in. But baby boomers and Gen X are a different consumer than anyone before them. So we had better have different options. That's it. And that's everything I've talked about has really connects to that. And I think, of course, high performing CCRCs will always be full, but that is a small slice of humanity. And I just think that we can do better. And if we don't, the senior living version of Uber is just around the corner. So it's a little, who's coming for your lunch, and get on it. So it is exciting, but, not easy, which is a great combination, honestly.
Well, that's a great place to leave it. Vassar, thanks so much for joining us here on Transform. I've really enjoyed our conversation today.
My pleasure. Thank you.
That does it for this episode of Transform. I'm Austin Montgomery for Senior Housing News. Thanks for listening.